Chapter 8. On Sunday, the party for Ethan and Elvira at White's was set for 12:30, and so Nia took Romeo for a long walk in the morning along the seafront. It was a beautiful morning, and Nia was quickly coming to the conclusion this was her favourite time of day here. A real feeling each day of a fresh start. She saw a ferry had arrived and went to watch the cars unloading, people arriving on their holidays or returning home. From the side of the ship, she saw a long stream of passengers walking, and was surprised to recognise the man who Ruby had been so horrified to see in the tunnel, and wondered who he was. Nia returned home to get ready for the party at lunchtime. She decided on her red shirt dress and heels and made her way up the road. As always, she felt a flutter of nerves going in on her own. Everyone was already gathered down the end of the brasserie. She discovered that curtains had covered a wall of patio doors, which now stood open, and in the garden a few couples sat at tables enjoying early drinks. Elvira was glowing, in a short white dress and flat sandals, her hair loose down her back. Ethan was wearing his usual cords and shirt. Guests were mingling, drinking glasses of Prosecco and orange juice, and chatting. But the atmosphere seemed tense, with the laughter too hard, the smiles too tight. Ethan made a short speech, thanking them for coming, then pointed out a buffet and the table where they would all sit. Wine and soft drinks were offered by the waiter, and then the bottles left on the table for people to help themselves. It was a quiet meal. Joe and Elvira did most of the talking. Ruby was particularly quiet, the same knitted cardigan and hemp bag on the back of her chair. Nia noticed she was hardly eating and was sitting with her back to Richie, who glared at his food. It was clear they had rowed. After they had finished the meal, a waiter brought over a beautiful cake, decorated with buttercream icing and country roses. The cake was sliced and served, and once everyone had their piece, Lucy spoke. She was wearing a smart blue shift dress with one of her signature silk scarves and large sunglasses. "I brought a little gift for the happy couple. Many congratulations, Elvira and Ethan." She picked up a small bag that had been hidden by her feet and handed it to Ethan. From this, he pulled a glass jar full of shiny green stones. "I was going to give you rose quartz," explained Lucy, "but I thought maybe these were more appropriate. They are a venture in. They encourage trust and honesty. They are good crystals for setting out on new ventures, like getting married." Ethan smiled.
"Thank you so much, Lucy. I know how much thought you will have put into this gift."
Elvira's smile was tighter.
"Yes, thank you, although I hope we don't need crystals to make us be honest with each other, though."
A rather strained laugh followed. Jade handed them a card, the envelope sealed with a wax stamp.
"Ah, your signature," said Elvira, carefully breaking the seal.
Jade held out her hand towards Nia.
"This is my sealing or signet ring," she explained.
Nia saw a gold band engraved with a bird similar to a delicate signet ring.
"That is very pretty," said Nia. "I see you wear it on your ring finger. Some people wear them on their little finger, don't they? Think they used to, particularly men, but nowadays you can wear them on whatever finger you like. Ruby has two now. Richie gave her a small one as an engagement ring. That's what got us both interested in them. As I make candles, we started using them for seals on letters and presents. And then, of course, Richie's father gave Ruby a very expensive one on their wedding. Show Nia your rings."
Ruby held out her hands. On her left hand, with her wedding ring, she wore a delicate signet ring with a rose engraved on it. On her right hand, she wore a much larger, thick gold ring. The carving was intricate and very skillful. A woman's face, in profile, with an R wrapped around it.
"They are both lovely, but I can see this one is very special," Nia said. "It's 18-carat gold. Richie's father had it engraved. It was my wedding present from him, I only use it to seal very special letters. I'd hate to damage it. Ruby looked more carefully at the ring. It's getting a bit loose, actually. I should see to that. And it needs a clean. I must do that when I get home. Elvira raised her voice, speaking to Jade.
Thank you. I guess you made this, she said, standing up a handmade card of blue silk forget-me-not flowers.
You are all so creative, said Nia. That's lovely, Jade. Silently, Ruby got up and returned with a bag, which she placed, without speaking, in front of Elvira. The present was wrapped in red tissue, sealed with wax and Ruby's rose ring. Elvira opened it and held up a small painting of the sea signed by Richie.
Thank you so much, she said.
Although the subject matter was pretty conventional, Nia found herself staring at a painting that seemed to draw her in. There was no doubt Richie was a very talented artist and was capable of far more than something to hang on the wall, as Ruby had described it. Jo leapt up and returned with a bottle of champagne and then invited everyone out in the garden for coffee. Nia carefully carried a mug of steaming coffee to a seat outside and sat next to Lucy, who asked Nia about her daughter. Nia filled her in on Safi's travels.
You must miss her.
I do. She's not been gone long, but I miss her. Still, it's good for her, and she's loving it.
That's all you can hope for, that she is happy, blooming.
Lucy clasped her hands together. Even through the sunglasses, Nia saw pain in her eyes.
I expect you've realised by now, Ian and I have never been blessed with children. I would have loved to, but it wasn't to be. I would have adopted or fostered even, but Ian didn't want to, so we never had the privilege of bringing up children.
Lucy took off her sunglasses briefly and dabbed under her eye with the crook of her finger. It was a tiny gesture, but in it, Nia sensed years of private suffering. Before they could talk more, they were distracted by raised voices from Jade and Ruby further down the garden. Although it was impossible to make out exactly what Jade was saying, she was clearly upset. She ran inside, while Ruby went to the bottom of the garden and retreated to the spot behind the shed. Excusing herself from Lucy, Nia went down to find Ruby and was shocked to find her sitting on the ground, her arms wrapped tightly around her. Nia sat next to her and laid her hand gently on her shoulder.
Ruby? What is it? Hey, shush now.
Ruby sniffed and wiped her face with the back of her hand.
It's all falling apart. I try so hard, but it's never enough.
She started to cry again.
I'm only trying to do the right thing. No one understands me, not even my sister. I only want what is best for her. Lying and secrets are so destructive. Why can't anyone see it? I tell you, Nia, finding out someone you trusted with your soul has betrayed you just kills you.
What's happened?
Ruby stepped back and thumped her heart with her fist.
He's broken my heart.
The colour drained from her face. The tears poured down her cheeks, and again she was that child Nia saw at the red jet terminal, scared, abandoned, fragile.
Has this anything to do with Wednesday night and the red jet?
Ruby nodded, her face crumpled in pain.
When I couldn't see him with you, I started to drive away. Then I saw Richie walking into town. I had to follow him and find out what was happening. I parked and then followed him up the hill towards Northwood House. I don't suppose you have ever been up there, but it's really steep, and it was hard to keep up with him. At the top of the hill is a large car park, and I followed Richie past and then turned into the main road off that. Opposite is a small sprawl of houses, and he headed to them. It was so nerve-wracking, and I was wondering if I should turn back. All he had to do was turn around, and he would see me. However, just as I was starting to think about that, he walked up someone's drive.
Her voice broke.
He went into someone's house.
Ruby nodded.
He did. He had a key. He let himself in.
Nia held her breath but didn't dare speak. Did it mean Richie was having an affair? Ruby continued.
It seemed to confirm my worst fears. I knew something was not right.
She paused.
You know what I mean? You told me you've had the same feelings. I'd had this sense of Richie keeping things from me, but I dreaded saying anything. Sometimes anything is easier than the truth.
And have you talked to Richie now? Ruby looked away.
Yes, we talked. It's complicated. We've a lot to sort out now. But it's a relief, in some ways, to have things in the open. I hope we can work on this now, but it will take a long time for me to trust him again.
She looked intently towards the rest of the people in the close, clustered at the top of the garden.
It's made me realise the importance of facing the truth for us all. My experiences and then a phone call last night brought home to me that there are other people here who need to do the same. It's time everyone here stopped hiding behind lies.
Nia picked up on the phone call. What was that about, she wondered, and asked Ruby.
It came while I was working at the charity last night.
Ruby hesitated.
I'm going to talk to the group about it in a minute. It concerns everyone.
She squeezed Nia's arm.
Thank you. Look after yourself. You need to watch yourself here.
Nia blinked. What do you mean? When I arrived, Jade told me to be careful. Why the warnings? Ruby's face creased in concern.
Jade said that. I'm surprised, but she's right. As I said when I showed you that horrible doll thing, someone here is hiding some very dark thoughts. But it's not just that. No one here is quite what you think.
Nia noticed people were gravitating back to the tables and places they'd sat at for lunch, and so she and Ruby walked over to join them. Elvira was sharing her wedding planner album, which was divided into sections for flowers, dresses and the like, and Elvira had cut and pasted various pictures and ideas for each. Nia picked up her glass, which still had some wine in, and sipped it. Lucy appeared to be the only person showing any interest, but Elvira was clearly enjoying showing someone her album.
I'm not going to tell you all the details of the dress I'm having made, but it does have a simple square neckline like this, and is very fitting like this one.
Eventually, Elvira seemed to sense the lack of interest and closed the album.
I won't bore you all any more, she said. Lucy asked to see it, that's all.
I'm glad we're all here, said Ruby. She spoke firmly, her voice a bit too loud. She took a long swig from her glass. Look, I'm sorry if this breaks up the party, but I have to say something.
She paused, took a deep breath.
I've been through a lot lately, and I've learned a few things. One of the most important is that you can't live a lie. You have to be honest with yourself and people you are close to. Since Mum died, my life has been a bit of a mess, to be honest, but I am trying to put that right now. There are personal issues, but also things that relate to people in this group. I am ashamed to say I have lied, but I intend to sort that out.
She glanced at Ian then, looking down, fiddled with a glass on the table.
The reason I'm saying all this is because I think it's something we all have to face. Something happened last night that brought this home to me.
She paused again. Her fingers shook now. She coughed, paused to steady herself.
You all know I work for a charity on Saturday and Sunday nights, but none of you know exactly what I do.
Ruby continued.
I work for an island-based helpline, similar to the Samaritans. Obviously, I have had to keep it confidential. It would be terrible if someone was put off seeking help because they knew who would answer.
Ian looked at his watch. Lucy was picking up her bag, ready to go. Joe had started to collect glasses from the table. No one was taking much notice of Ruby. But that was about to change.
Last night I received a call, and it was someone whose voice I immediately recognised. It was one of you.
Ruby appeared to be consciously avoiding eye contact and stared down at the table. Joe slowly put the glasses down.
Lucy clutched her bag. Ruby had everyone's attention now.
I felt the right thing to do was to pass this person on to a colleague, but before I could stop them, this person started to pour out their problems. They were hysterical, clearly very distressed. Finally, I managed to speak, and I then suggested they might be better talking to someone else. At that point, this person recognised my voice and, well, they were very angry and rang off. The point is that this is serious, and I'm very concerned. You need help. The thing is, I can't simply forget what I heard. I have to do something. A number of people are affected. Please come and talk to me. I would much rather we work this out together.
Now, hang on, Ruby, said Jade. That call was made to you in confidence. You shouldn't be telling us any of this. If you're that worried, you should speak to the person individually.
I don't think that would work. Putting this problem to the whole group, I hope will convince this person, show I am prepared to bring it out into the open.
Ruby looked around the table. It's time we all stopped playing games, isn't it? I want to help everyone here sort things out. She glanced at Richie. Things have to change.
Nia dragged her gaze away from Ruby and scanned the faces of everyone at the table. They all looked stunned, shocked at Ruby's outburst. But there was something deeper than that. In every face, Nia saw fear.
Ian thumped his fist on the table.
That's enough, Ruby. We're all adults, capable of sorting out our own lives.
He's right, you know, said Jade. We have a right to choose how we live.
But we shouldn't all be living with lies and deceit. It's not right, said Ruby.
Her colour was high now, her voice more hysterical, her eyes bright with tears.
But how we live is actually nothing to do with you, snapped Elvira. You've always been the same, interfering, thinking you know better than everyone else. It's plain dangerous.
Dangerous, Ruby repeated.
I agree. This time it was Lucy, her voice full of emotion.
You have to stop interfering in other people's lives.
To put it bluntly, Ruby, you need to butt out, said Ian.
You'd prefer to cover things up, wouldn't you? Ruby replied to him. You've even got me to lie, to enable you to have your 5 minutes of fame? Well, not anymore. I have to be able to move on from the accident.
Ruby turned to the others.
Tonight, I won't be going to the helpline. In fact, I may have to give up my work there after this. But it will be worth it. I need to talk to the person who phoned last night. Please come and see me this evening. I'll be in the flat. The door of the gallery is always open. Just come on up. Later, I'm doing the books at the salon, and then I'll be down on the beach by the pier. Please, I know you're frightened, but we can work this out. It's the same for everyone here. I can help you face up to what you have done. This can be a fresh start.
She was breathing fast, her face shining with a kind of missionary zeal. However, her words were met with cold, hard stares. It was then Nia remembered the voodoo doll. Ruby had said one of the people here had sent it. But who? She could see annoyance and, yes, fear on their faces, but one of them must have something deeper. If Ruby was right, someone here hated her. She should be able to see it, but she couldn't. But then someone had been hiding this feeling for some time now. Nia shivered. A cloud had covered the sun. The air turned cold. It reminded her of when she'd stood by a lakeside during a partial eclipse. The world had fallen silent, but it hadn't brought with it a sense of peace, rather one of unease and foreboding. Ruby grabbed her cardigan and hemp shopping bag and left.
Good God! What's got into her? Asked Elvira.
Ian leant over, picked up Ruby's glass and took a sip.
This isn't lemonade. There's vodka in this.
An uneasy silence fell. Slowly, everyone's eyes came to rest on Richie. He stood up.
I'm sorry. Ruby's not herself at the moment.
As it was approaching 4:30, Ethan suggested it might be a good time to wrap things up,
and everyone seemed relieved to be given permission to leave. As they gathered their things together, the guests quietly made plans for the rest of the evening. Ethan told Jade he'd see her at the rescue centre. Ian and Richie arranged to meet much later for their swim. Elvira wrapped up the remaining cake, which she said she would take later to the nursing home for her mum and staff to enjoy. Nia was pleased to return to Romeo at home. He, of course, was ready for a walk, and so she changed into jeans and trainers and went out. There was no one about. She kept the walk short and was glad to return and cuddle up with Romeo on the sofa. The events of the day had left Nia feeling on edge. The uneasy atmosphere at the party was difficult to shake off. Ruby had upset everyone. Everyone had looked shocked and fearful. Nia wasn't sure why they had reacted so badly to this, but she did agree with them that Ruby was in the wrong, sharing about the phone call to the helpline. That call had been made in confidence, and now everyone in the close would be wondering who made the call. What was so serious that Ruby had felt the need to break her promise of confidentiality and risk losing her job at the charity? At about 7:30, Nia went upstairs to find her book and looked out onto the close. She saw Ruby walk up the street, go into the salon, turn on the lights, and sit in front of the laptop at reception. Somehow, Nia doubted that the person who had made the call had been to see Ruby. The problem was, Nia had a feeling Ruby's speech, rather than making everyone more open, had simply frightened them and might make them even more secretive. Who had used the word dangerous? That was it. It was Elvira. The word had shocked her, but Nia felt she was right. There had been a sense of danger, threat in the air after Ruby spoke. Nia looked down at Ruby working alone in the salon. She suddenly looked very vulnerable and alone, and Nia was scared for her.